Hello and welcome to Groundwire, your community news from coast to coast to coast. On this week's episode...
This is the kind of behavior that Indian people have come to expect.
So, I mean, Fun Drive in some ways was like a referendum on ad-free. And we said, okay, look, if you want it, we've got to hit this level. We've got to hit $60,000. And we did it. We've passed $61,000. So now it's on us to figure out how to make it all work.
And we should be getting answers in about, 4 months or so.
Groundwire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus and Community Radio Association of Canada. This edition of Groundwire is produced at 94.9 CHRW on the campus of Western University in London, Ontario. I'm Ed Von Ettercass. We'll start out with a headline from CJLY in Nelson, BC, produced by Catherine Fisher with sound by Colin Payne.
Last episode, we brought Groundwire listeners news from Sinaik's ancestral territory. On Tuesday, March 2nd, Sinaik spokesperson Marilyn James and her son Dennis Sorelli Jr. were arrested at the Sinaik's cultural camp at Perry Ridge in British Columbia. They were arrested for refusing to comply with a court injunction granted to Galena Contractors Limited of Nicus, BC, who received a logging contract from BC Timber Sales. On the day the court date was set, about 150 people gathered outside of the Nelson, BC courthouse in support of Marilyn and Dennis. Here's Marilyn James speaking to the crowd.
This is the kind of behavior that Indian people have come to expect, not only from the court systems, but also from a certain segment of our community, namely private corporations, who play with the Crown corporations to diminish more and more and more of the domestic watersheds. We have a responsibility to stand up and protect it.
Yes! Marilyn and Dennis are due back in BC Supreme Court on Monday, March 31st, for a pre-trial hearing, and a contempt charge will be brought against them on May 20th.
And now we go to the Community Radio Report with some news from CKUW. Last week, a Mohawk Nation near Marysville, Ontario, blocked a major rail corridor to raise awareness of the missing and murdered Aboriginal women. About a dozen protesters set up camp by the tracks near the Tiendanaga Mohawk Reserve between Belleville and Kingston on Wednesday, March 19th, lighting a small fire and erecting a sign reading, "Justice for Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women." They demanded the federal government open a formal inquiry. 2 weeks earlier, on March 7th, a parliamentary report on the issue of the disappeared and murdered women concluded that there was no need for a national inquiry into the missing women. This is despite information in the report itself saying things like Aboriginal women in Canada are more than three times as likely to be the target of victimization as non-Aboriginal women. The report also says that since 1940, 824 Aboriginal women have vanished or been murdered. A federal court has ruled Friday, March 21st, that the government cannot ban medical marijuana users from growing their own weed. Judge Michael Manson of the federal court was ruling on changes that Health Canada was going to enact on the medical marijuana program, saying that the proposed changes would harm the patients dependent on the program. Health Canada had earlier allowed patients to grow their own weed, but did an about-face earlier this month when they sent a letter to patients saying they would have to destroy all of their pot plants or have their names turned over to the police by the agency. Despite the ruling on Friday, a spokesperson for Health Canada said that they would maintain their current policy of treating marijuana as a narcotic drug that should be regulated and grown only by the government.
Hi, my name is Kinney Starr. I'm a producer, songwriter, and environmental activist, as well as an Indigenous rights activist. I'm asking for your help and consideration in trying to stop our pension funds and tax dollars from going into the destructive mining practices of Tahoe Resources and Goldcorp in Guatemala.
The Quebec-Guatemala Accompaniment Project has recently launched a new campaign called The Money Thread. This campaign was born from the simple observation that Canadians should know where their money goes. Canadians are financially linked to many violations of human rights and exploitation situations. The Money Thread invites Canadians to demand that their private financial institutions divest from Canadian mining companies Goldcorp and Tower Resources on the basis of documentation showing how these companies have been and still are committing environmental and human rights abuses in Guatemala. For more information, you can visit themoneythread.org. This is Emily Philipson for Groundwire.
This last headline comes from Josh Pavin of CKUT in Montreal.
We are talking about the Quebec Charter of Values today, and be joined on the line by Karine Jean-Francois. We read out the declaration, and maybe to start, you could just give us a bit of a background on what was the impetus to write it.
I was actually not part of the people who initially wrote it. It was mostly done by Alan Wong with other people from Couleur and other queer and trans people of color in Montreal. And it was really because there was a voice that was not heard, and mostly the voices of people who, you know, identify as queer and trans and being part of this big LGBTQ umbrella were actually for the charter. And we thought it was important to bring our voices to the table.
Why specifically the LGBTIQ element to it? Could you talk a little bit about how that larger umbrella is seen as being pro?
So a lot of the things that were said around from more mainstream like gay organizations and prominent gay people was that as a community they tried to get away from the church, and they were actually talking about a Catholic church, and to, you know, move away from the oppression that religion could bring and the homophobic state of the church, the Catholic church. And so for them, it was very important that religion was really clearly separated from the state, but also actually more abolished. That was like their thing, was like religion are all homophobic, and allowing people to be religious make them feel like as if they would be prejudiced against them. Sadly, in Montreal, there's not really any religious organization, you know, that's really being there with a lot of queer and trans people. But a lot of queer and trans people are religious. Some of us are not. Some of us are. Some of us are from Islamic, Muslim, Sikh, or Jewish backgrounds. Some of us are Catholic or general Christian or Buddhist. But really, the reality is that religion is something that gives a lot of strength for certain people, but it also for other people is actually something that, you know, they ran away from. And that's okay, and that's just like understanding how for certain people it can give strength and sometimes it can't. But it's also about, you know, religion is not this one monolithic thing, and there's only one way to be.
You are listening to Groundwire, an NCRA project. We'll be back with your main stories after this brief musical interlude.
Fire the cannons, burn this city down.
Hey! Did I die? Did I die? Did I die?
Oh, well, help me, brother, for I have lost my mind.
Hey! Did I die? Did I die? Did I die?
Oh, give back everything that you don't need. Everything that you don't need. Oh, and I won't stop bleeding. Oh, I'm leaving. Well, I've seen better days inside. Oh, and I won't stop bleeding. Oh, I'm leaving. everything that you don't need.
That was Did I Die by London band The Strumbellas. Now back to Groundwire. One of the distinguishing characteristics of community radio stations is their ability to provide programming not shaped or restricted by advertiser dollars. Winnipeg CKUW took this advantage to the ultimate extreme by vowing to their listeners to go ad-free. CKUW's news volunteer, Regan Hadley, provides more details in this week's Community Radio Report.
Another major milestone is to be achieved within days, as CKUW officially goes ad-free. This decision follows a commitment made to listeners during the station's fund drive in February. The pledge was that if listeners and followers of the station helped CKUW meet their highest pledge goal ever, of $60,000, the station would go ad-free.
If you like independent music or don't like too many commercials, then you should donate to the fund drive to keep CKUW alive.
Listeners made good on their part of the bargain. Now it's up to the station to deliver. I caught up with a longtime CKUW programmer and staff member to get more details about the change.
My name's Rob Schmidt. I'm the station manager here at CKUW.
What does it mean for CKUW to be ad-free?
Well, I mean, when we talked about ad-free, we're talking about advertising, which to me is something where there's money exchanged, okay? And so we're not going to do that anymore. If a volunteer wants to go on air and talk about a band that they love or a product that they like to use, they can do that. That's cool. I mean, that's life, right? We all talk about things that we like and share them online, and we should share them on the radio too. But if a business comes to us and says, hey, you know what, we've got a whole bunch of money for you to advertise this great new body wash that we'd like to sell, we'd say, no, we don't do that anymore.
What did CKUW have to do in order to go ad-free?
Well, I mean, we were budgeting up to $10,000 a year in advertising. So
when, wow.
Yeah, and in our best years, we were making maybe $20,000. First thing I did was I looked at the budget and I said, is this even possible? If we don't have this money, how can we do this? And the answer was obvious. It was to go to the people that have always supported CKUW. It was to go to the listeners. Our whole philosophy of being a community-driven, a listener-driven station is fulfilled at Fund Drive through listener donations. And so let's see if the listeners want this. Let's say, hey, we've got this wild idea. We're going to eliminate ads. What do you think about it? So, I mean, Fund Drive in some ways was like a referendum on ad-free. And we said, okay, look, if you want it, we've got to hit this level. We've got to hit $60,000. And we did it. We've passed $61,000. So now it's on us to figure out how to make it all work.
What are some of the challenges that come with being ad-free?
It's funny. Since we started talking about going ad-free, I've received more emails. It's like we've been playing hard to get or something, right? I've received more emails with, oh, I'm opening this business. Oh, I've got this product. I'd like you to. And I've had to say, you know, no. So that's a challenge, turning down money, right? I think that's a difficult thing to do. The other challenge is, you know, just those little trimming the corners on our budget to make this efficiency work. And then the other challenge of figuring out what ad-free means. How can we change the sound of the station where there's more happening, but we're not taking money for it, we're not expecting anything for it, we're doing it as a pure community service. Since we went on air 15 years ago, we haven't made a change this big to the station. We've never said, look, we're going to change our sound dramatically. Potentially, there's more room for volunteers to be creative with their shows, to get to have longer, you know, private stations always advertise 90 minutes commercial free. And for us, it's like the next 100 years commercial free, right? So I think that kind of opens up lots of opportunities. People can play with that. But it also just, I think it gets back to the origins of community radio, and it gets back to our roots, and it allows us to really take advantage of the opportunity to do things that have no commercial support, you know, to have opinions that are unpopular, to play music that wouldn't find commercial support or backing, or, you know, at this time, but maybe somewhere down the road. And yeah, just kind of, like I said, be true to our roots and bring community radio back to kind of the countercultural alternative source that it was when it started up.
CKUW is soliciting suggestions from its listener base to help define what ad-free radio should sound like. If you have comments to share, go to the website ckuw.ca and click the feedback link in the right-hand column. For Groundwire, this is CKUW's Reagan Headley with the Community Radio Report.
That report was produced and narrated by Reagan Headley of CKUW in Winnipeg, with assistance from Michael Welch. Background music was by Trio Bembe. For our next feature, Jay Peachy of CJSF spoke with Stan Probosch about the lack of progress that has been made in implementing the recommendations of the Cohen Report and the expansion of fish farms on the West Coast.
Stan Probosch from Watershed Watch. Thanks for joining Wild Sand Warrior Radio here on CJSF.
Watershed Watch and myself, we were participants in the Cohen Inquiry, and that was a big $26 million investigation looking at some of the threats to Fraser River sockeye and the long-term decline that we've been seeing. So that was announced in 2009, and we were heavily involved in that whole investigation that lasted about 2 years. And Justice Cohen finally came out with a final report on Halloween of 2012, and we were actually quite pleased with this report. It was very rigorous. It was about 1,100 pages, three volumes, with 75 recommendations to the federal government, and then many conservationists felt that it was kind of almost like a blueprint to protecting wild salmon for the future. And in many spots, it was quite critical of the federal government, including the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, on various aspects of management of salmon and some of the threats. But unfortunately, you know, we've been tracking these recommendations, and many of his recommendations have deadlines. So, you know, they basically say government has to do X, Y, and Z by a certain date. And unfortunately, it's been just over a year since these recommendations come out, and 16 of these deadlines have lapsed without any meaningful action or recommendation or response from the federal government. And that's pretty much all of them. So it's the
basically
response
from, ignored. Sorry, it.
Go ahead.
So basically, have ignored it, and we, for those of us that are active, we know that there's a. An expansion of fish farms now that's been announced by Fisheries Minister, so totally in the other direction.
Exactly. So that kind of, you know, this expansion in the light of Cohen, plus the lack of action, really drove us to, we just made us feel like we need to do something else. And so we've gone to the Auditor General of Canada through a process that any citizen can initiate, and it's called an environmental petition. So it's not like a citizen's petition, you know, that typical citizen's. It's a list of questions that any citizen can pose to, say, the Minister of Fisheries around a certain issue, like salmon farming or the Cohen Inquiry, and. The minister and the Department of Fisheries and Oceans has to respond in writing within 120 days. So,
of your petition?
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to get, we filed two of these, and around lack of action, around Cohen, lack of action around wild salmon policy and the concerns around salmon farming. And we should be getting answers in about, 4 months or so.
Last October, the National Energy Board decided to approve Enbridge's Line 9 reversal plan. The Chamber of Commerce of the East of Montreal was in favor of this decision because it would create jobs and participate in maintaining the industry. On Wednesday, March 19th, an anti-colonialist and anti-capitalist demonstration occupied the Chamber of Commerce of the East of Montreal.
No Line 9 on stolen native land. No Line 9 on stolen native land.
This action took place as March 19th was the day of action against Line 9. Amanda Lickers from Reclaim Turtle Island explained that if Line 9 is not stopped, it will have dramatic effects on the environment and on the native communities who live in proximity to it.
Line 9 itself passes through every single tributary that flows into Lake Ontario, as well as runs along the north shore of the St. Lawrence River. Wherever a spill occurs, it will directly impact either the Great Lakes or the St. Lawrence River or both. I feel a lot of concern because we might as well say goodbye to Lake Ontario. And there is no diluted bitumen pipeline that runs through a population of 9 million people. That's really important to consider, because there has not been in the history of the tar sands a pipeline that's run dilbit through such a high concentration of people, as well as directly in the city of Toronto. The pipeline goes right beside the TTC, not only from water contamination and the impacts of spills on municipalities, not to mention the fact that there's 18 First Nations communities who are directly passed by the line, but also, bitumen itself is a corrosive solid, and it has very carcinogenic solvents in order to make the bitumen viscous smooth enough to actually pass it through the pipeline. And so when there is a spill, when that occurs, not only will you have the water contamination and ground contamination from the bitumen flowing down, but you'll also have an air contamination from the solvents dissolving off. And ultimately, Line 9 is about expanding the tar sands. So Line 9 can't be looked at within as this isolated project, because it's part of a broader system of expanding the Athabasca tar sands, which is about continuing the slow industrial genocide of the Chipewyan people, of the indigenous folks there, as well as all of our nations across who are impacted by, as we've been calling, this black snake. And so it's really important to realize that this isn't just an isolated battle, that this has absolutely everything to do with tar sands expansion and with the impacts of colonial capitalism and land theft on our nation.
Amanda Lickers also explained that the project is in violation of a number of treaties.
From the Haldimand Proclamation to the Simcoe Deed in Tyendinaga, all the way to the Royal Proclamation itself, there's a number of ways in which that pipeline is already in violation of a number of treaties, including the Canadian Constitution, because in the Canadian Constitution, Section 35, it's outlined that there needs to be due consultation with First Nations in matters which affect us most directly, and that has just not been the case. The pipeline was approved because places like Suncor, which is actually right in the east end of the Montreal Island, which is where the tar sands are going to be refined from Line 9. It's going to be right at the Suncor refinery. But folks like Suncor and Enbridge and TransCanada, they have a vested interest, obviously, in these projects going ahead. And just to show you the level of impunity, before the National Energy Board even approved the pipeline project, they were doing construction in preparation for the reversal. So they were already reversing the pipeline before they even had, that rubber stamping. And I think what needs to happen, honestly, is long-term occupations of pumping stations. People need to find ways to shut down the valves of the pipeline. From the Enbridge headquarters to the Suncor refinery, there are a number of sites to interject at. Ultimately, what needs to happen is we need to keep the eye directly also at the tar sands. People need to know where the construction is happening. They do things like that you would call integrity digs, where they dig up the pipeline to see how paper thin it is and when it's going to crack open. Honestly, I'm this is basically advocating for something illegal, but sabotage is very important. being able to cause them economic damage is one of the strongest tools that we have. But understanding that Line 9 is part of a larger project, which is the tar sands, and how do we stop it at the source, needs to be the bigger question.
They don't care if you're indigenous or not. They all care about money. That's the only thing they give a shit about. So, you know, we got to keep fighting.
This is Emily Phillipson reporting for Groundwire.
And that's all the time we have for Groundwire this week. Groundwire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus and Community Radio Association of Canada, or NCRA for short. All of our episodes are available for listening and podcasting at groundwire.ncra.ca. If you're interested in contributing as a journalist, get in touch with us by email at groundwire@ncra.ca. This edition was produced at CHRW Radio Western in London, Ontario. I've been your host, Ed Von Attercass. From all of us here at Groundwire, thanks for tuning in.